should regulate journalism and how much? Who should regulate journalism and how much? That's been the big question on the minds of Nigerian media watchers for the last couple of weeks since the National Assembly began the process of amending the NBC Act and the Nigerian Press Council Act. So that's what we're going to be talking about for the rest of the hour. It brings us to our big hard fact. The Nigerian Union of Journalists, Nigerian Guild of the Newspaper Proprietors Association of Nigeria have all condemned the proposed amendment to the Nigerian Press Council Act. So that means that every stakeholder organization in the newspaper business has condemned the proposed amendments. In fact, we've heard them say that they were not consulted on it. And since we say that you cannot cut a man's hair in his absence, we want to hear from the press about their thoughts on these bills. My first guest is the director at the Center for Media Law and Advocacy, Richard Akinola. I hope he can join us eventually via Skype. We're expecting him. But we already have on Skype with us our second guest. He's a director, International Press Center, Lanre Arogundade. Thank you so much for joining us, sir. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me. I hope you can hear me clearly.
Very clearly, yes.
Thank you very much.
All right. Lagos, we also want to hear from you.
Yes.
Lagos, we want to hear from you as well. Women, call us on 01465-7190. And men, call us on 0700-993-993-993. Lanre, before we get into the bills, there have been reports that the National Assembly is shelving them and won't proceed anymore. Is this accurate? What have you heard?
Well, I don't think that is accurate. What I heard from the chair of the House Committee on Information and the sponsor of the bill, that was on Channel's television a couple of days ago, was that he was suspending the bill. That was what he said. He said since people have said there are issues that need to have more dialogue with stakeholders, the bill was being suspended. So that means that the bill is still in the National Assembly. It's just that the consideration is under suspension. You know, by parliamentary procedure, after the first and second readings, you have the public hearing by the relevant committee to take input from stakeholders. And then the committee will look at the draft of the bill again, put everything together, and then retable the bill before the House. That is the third reading. That is the stage where there will be adoption, which is usually clause by clause. So technically speaking, the bill is still before the National Assembly. It's just that the process of consideration is on suspension.
Lagos, if you just tuned in, let me remind you that we're streaming live on Facebook and YouTube. Facebook is Nigeria Info 99.3, YouTube Nigeria Info FM. What that means is you can watch this interview live on Facebook and YouTube. Lanre is joining us via Skype. Lanre, I want us to talk about the latest advice or directive from the NBC to radio stations and TV channels. We've been asked or told to be even more circumspect about how we report the security situation. Specifically, for example, we shouldn't broadcast the names or identities of kidnap and banditry victims. What's your assessment of this?
Well, I do not think it's a very helpful directive. And the National Broadcasting Commission, it's becoming rather notorious about this. Now, in conflict-sensitive journalism, we actually advise that newspapers, the media as a whole, should report conflicts with some discretion. It's not every time that you report the identity of victims. It's not every time that you do all that. So that is at the level of discretion. And in any case, when we have a situation where the families of a kidnapped victim come forward to say that, you know, a relative has been kidnapped and we need to publish this, you can't come around and say the media should not publish that kind of information. Because at this stage, we're looking at what exactly is in the public interest. It is more dangerous for the media not, you know, to report this, because then anything could then happen. And the kind of support that the government needs from the public, they will not get it. Because I believe that the fact that, you know, the media reports these issues, reports the kidnappings, the number of those kidnapped, you know, the identities, and then sometimes when one or two are released or government makes effort to release them, the totality of that helps to promote confidence in the system. So for me, this is just like another gag directive, especially when they now said that directive actually mentioned newspaper reviews. And this was coming about a week after the newspapers had a front page protest by way of blackout over these amendment bills of the, that we're talking about. So in a sense, I think invariably what the government is trying to do really is to stop the broadcast media from reviewing, you know, newspapers. And that in itself will be a further setback when it comes to dissemination of information and the right of the public to know.
But the NBC says that its advice on how to report security stories is so that ongoing operations are not jeopardized. Now, I want to ask, do you...
Well, I'm not aware that the NBC is an arm of the armed forces or the intelligence agencies. You already have the Nigerian Broadcasting Code. All they could have done was to remind the broadcast media of the provisions, you know, of the code. In any case, apart from the code, we pride ourselves in the Nigerian media of having the code of ethics of the Nigerian media. We also have, you know, the Nigerian Media Code of Election, you know, coverage. So it's not, editors are not, you know, irresponsible people. And even as we speak, it is not every information that Nigerian editors get that they do publish. And what we try to tell our government really is that in crisis situations, in war situations, government informally reach out, you know, to the media to reach certain, you know, understandings, especially when they're carrying out operations. It is allowed. It is done all over the world where you have engagement between the media and the government. And we could cite some recent examples. The invasion of Iraq, for example, it wasn't as if the American media was not aware, but there was, you know, some understanding. So this attitude of not seeing the media, you know, as partners, but seeing the media as enemy, I feel is what is propelling, you know, all this. And that we feel that everything that has to be done by order from above. You are ordered not to do this. You are ordered to suspend your Twitter. You are ordered not to, you know, it doesn't work in a democracy.
All right. Lagos, let's hear your thoughts to the conversation that we are currently having. 01465-71900 for women. For men, 0700-993-993-993. We're now joined by the director at the Center for Media Law and Advocacy, Richard Akinola. Thank you so much for joining us again, sir.
Thank you. Thank you.
Lagos, let's take your thoughts. 99.3, hello.
Hello, good evening, Sandra.
Good evening. What's your name, sir?
Yeah, I'm Benjamin. I'm calling from Ikeja.
Benjamin, welcome.
Sandra, you see, I think you were talking about, there's a topic you brought as of last month, or earlier of this month, if I may remember, about Twitter ban. We Nigerians, we're able to bring in our expression, how we feel about the situations, and at the same time, where everybody give up his opinions.
Right.
And now again, look at the same thing. You know, I made a comment on this issue of our governance. You see, these people, they know what Nigeria needs, but it's unfortunate that they are now using military system in this dispensation, telling us they are operating democracy. And this is not how to operate democracy. They ban Twitter, we complain. And at the same time, they selected journalists that will be giving press to the presidency, and we didn't say anything. And now again, they are coming again to stop journalists from broadcasting what they have seen. So that means, I told you that these people, they are using Sharia law against us. Oh. And this is not democracy in this country, and it's not helping us. And this is the high time we should start shouting as a citizen of this country, because we can't take this, and this should continue again.
All right, Benjamin, thank you very much for calling. The Sharia part is a bit of an exaggeration, but okay. 99.3, hello.
Good afternoon, Sandra.
Good afternoon, sir. What's your name?
My name is David.
Hi, David. Welcome. Go ahead.
Yes, our government are very interesting.
Okay.
I I don't know why they want to. They don't want to take a queue after you.
After me?
Because I always hear you say, I fight fake news with facts.
Okay.
So I don't know why they are just worrying themselves. When have they started this thing? They started with social media. You know, if you don't have anything to hide, even if anybody is publishing fake news, then come out with your own facts. I said this is the position of things. And everybody have a reasoning. They can weigh the two together and bring out the truth. So all this, the activity just going about to find a way of subverting the truth, will not help. Will not help. That's my submission.
Thank you for making your submission. Richard, the bills empower the NBC and the Press Council to create and enforce codes of conduct for media and press, respectively. But each of those codes would be subject to input and approval from the information minister. Richard, what are the downsides to this?
That is absolutely impossible. Absolutely impossible for Ministry of Information to impose a code of conduct for the media. It's impossible because the NPO, that's the Nigerian Press Organization, already has a code of conduct. And NPO is made up of MPAN, NUJ, and the Nigerian Guild of Editors. Already has a code of conduct, and it's an internal affair of the media. So, and every journalist is subject to such a code. So there's no way Ministry of Information or the government can come and impose a code. It's just like a government say you want to impose a code on a legal profession. When the legal profession is self-regulated. So it's impossible. So you see, what we are witnessing is a subtle attempt at major dictatorship. And you see, from history, this is how it starts.
Okay.
Like that caller said, initially we started with Twitter. Then the next thing is that, of course, we have been talking about the overbearing attitude of the Ministry of Information on the NBC. And it has been a major, and that's why many of us have been saying that we need to detach the NBC from the apron strings of the ministry, because it cannot be acting as a department in the Ministry of Information. It's impossible. It has to act independently. And the same thing with the Nigerian Press Council. So, from the draft sent to the National Assembly, which fortunately that has been suspended, but we should not just take in things lying low, because they can just catch someone on our web and say, okay, it has been suspended, and come out with some funny legislation. Because in the draft, it's like the NBC, it would be an arm, like a department, the Ministry of Information. It's absolutely ridiculous. So there's no way the Nigerian press will allow that. Of course, you see, Nigerians saw what happened last week with how the media responded to the subtle attempt. So, of course, the media is fighting back. So they can't fold their arms and allow themselves to be guillotined by this sort of attempt at censorship. It's impossible. So there's no way the government can impose a code of conduct on the Nigerian press, because it is self-regulatory. NPR already has a code of conduct which is updating on a regular basis. So it's impossible.
Now, before this, the NBC has also ordered all TV and radio stations to stop using their Twitter handles because the government has suspended Twitter. Plus, they're not allowed to use tweets or information from Twitter during broadcasts. Richard, this is still for you. What are your thoughts both on the legality of this directive and the ethics of this directive in terms of journalism?
It is illegal. Absolutely illegal and unconstitutional. Because, in fact, Section 39 of the Constitution is clear. And Section 39, that has to do with freedom of expression, and which is further strengthened by Article 9 of the African Charter of Human and People's Rights. And that's the domesticated law. Apart from the fact that Nigeria is a signatory, but it has been domesticated, which means it is part of our laws. So, and with those two combination of provisions, there's no way, whatever government does can be valid. is absolutely illegal. Mm. And but because the matter is sub judice, because the matter is in the ECOWAS court, so one cannot go so deep into it. But the fact is that what the government does, as I said, I mean, it's a subtle attempt at censorship. Because how can you say a media has to not to? Because that's one of the tools they use in the in the course of their gathering. Business. Mm-hmm. So I mean, so how can you say they should tweet? So very soon they will say, okay, you can't use Facebook. Later they say you can't use Skype. So all this kind of is a subtle attempt at censorship, which of course the Nigerian press, as I said last time I was here. Now look, the freedom that the Nigerian press has today is a product of struggle. Nobody gives that kind of struggle, that kind of freedom on the platter of gold. It's a product of struggle, a product of advocacy, and a product of litigation. There have been various litigations on freedom of expression, which has expanded the freedom that we have today. So any infraction that is committed, of course, we go to court, as it was done in the case of the Senate, and of course, with... another person had already even gone to court in respect of a lawyer in Ibihe went to court in respect of the $5 million fine against Charles. And all these are just sort of attempts to intimidate the broker media. Now, let me ask a question. Hmm. If you say the media cannot, they should be trying to circumscribe them in terms of reporting terrorist activities, but the same government will now bring Gumi's meeting with terrorists to the same broadcast media to be published. So who is fooling who? So if the media could publish Gumi's meeting with terrorists and they cannot independently publish, or even report what the paper said in the newspaper review, I mean, it's in Congress.
Okay.
It doesn't make any sense.
Okay. Let me pivot to another aspect of the NBC Act. I'll come to Lanre with this particular question now. This proposed NBC Act amendment would require online broadcasters and over-the-top TV services to apply to the NBC for licenses. How enforceable is this, Lanre? Do you think it would help or harm the industry? Richard is laughing, but I want to hear Lanre's thoughts.
Well, I mean, quite frankly, it's one cannot do but laugh. But we're actually dealing with a very tragic situation.
Okay.
You know, it is said that history repeats itself usually in two ways: first as a fact, then secondly as a tragedy.
Okay.
I think we're having a repeat of both with what is happening under this government.
Okay.
On the one hand, you have a kind of fact; on the other one, you have a tragedy. Now, when you are talking of over-the-top, broadcasters, we are talking of, using, channels, like YouTube or doing, live something on Facebook.
Mm.
So at the end of the day, the whole attempt is just to curtail, that freedom of expression space by this government. That is just what they are doing. So all this idea that, Twitter must come and register in Nigeria, and a lot of people, you have people who are even supporting that. Oh, yeah, Twitter is making money. Why should they not register here? I don't understand. We have, let's just look at some other form of businesses, because people sometimes forget that media is business. You have aviation business, for example. Is KLM registered in Nigeria? Is Air France registered here? Is United Airlines registered in Nigeria? They're not registered, but they operate. They do business with Nigerians. Virgin Atlantic carries thousands of passengers every week. Now, there are international rules and regulations under which businesses operate, and there are various requirements, the tax you have to pay and all those things that you need to do. So these are well-established practices when it comes to international law. But when it comes to media, they want to make this exception. And I just wonder, where are we really going? Because like Richard has aptly captured it, we might wake up one day and government will say for one reason or the other there should be information blackout, shut down the internet, shut down every space, and the only information we have is information that comes from government. That is not the way to build democracy. That is not the way to grow the society. Because information remains the oxygen of democracy. When you tamper with that, you are tampering with the soul of democracy in any society. And that cannot be acceptable. You see, if you look at the newspapers protests, I like what they put on their front page. They talk about press freedom, but they also talked about the right of the people to know. And that is the basis of the existence of the press in all societies, that citizens have the right to know. I've been going through, you know, some of the chat responses or chat column as this program is progressing, and somebody has commented, you know, on your Facebook page, your live page, that his mother or grandmother in the village gets information through the newspaper headlines. It is what people look onto because it provides a lot of information. Regular, you know, newspaper headlines. People get briefed. They take their decision on things that happen. When you do this, you are just kind of, you know, gagging not just the press, but you are gagging the society itself. So that aspect of the NBC code that you mentioned is also not, you know, acceptable, because we're talking of a National Broadcasting Commission. In any case, one of the fundamental challenges that we have, and like Richard said, is the fact that these bodies are not independent. And so as we are fighting these obnoxious provisions in this act, we are at the same time also fighting for independence of these bodies. Because if they were to be independent, they would not be doing all this, you know, government bidding all the time. And so that is the problem that we have. So that's those provisions are also not, you know, acceptable.
You know, another controversial aspect of this amendment is the so-called Digital Access Fund. Basically, money from free to air services is supposed to enter this fund and be used to improve digital broadcasting in Nigeria. But I find the sharing formula interesting, and that's what's gotten most people talking, to be honest. NBC gets 40%, NTA and FRCN each get 10%, while every other radio and TV station in Nigeria shares the remaining 40%. So that's every state-owned station and every private station. I'm curious what your thoughts on that particular provision, your thoughts are on that particular provision, but I'm going to take those thoughts after the break. In the meantime, Lagos, let's take your calls. We'll take one call and then go on a very quick break and come back and keep talking to Lanre and Richard. You're listening to Hard Facts on 99.3 Nigeria Info, 0700-993-993-993. It's currently 5:25. Women, call us on 01465-7190. You can also send a message to WhatsApp. WhatsApp is 080-959-75805. Hello, thank you for calling us.
Yeah, good afternoon, ma'am.
Good afternoon. What's your name, sir?
Yeah, my name is Ruben from Yaba.
Hi, Ruben.
Yeah, I like the two guys you brought into the studio.
Okay.
It's been nice hearing from them.
Okay.
But they should also know that the government is trying to cantonize Nigeria, okay? They want to make Nigeria a praise country where we'll be praising only the government and cannot even condemn. They want to Chinanize our country. That's what I'm suspecting, because they have banned social, and they took our Twitter away from us. They are fining radio stations for nothing that they have done nothing. They are just going everywhere, constituting nuisance, executive rascality. You know, it's like putting padlock. See, what Nigerians will not appreciate, don't worry, that time will come where you will not even be able to speak out. This freedom, press freedom that we are enjoying, is what is keeping democracy. Is what is keeping our democracy. Once it's gone, then we are finished. We have become a communist state. Thank you very much, ma'am.
Thank you, Ruben, for calling. Yomi Williams on WhatsApp says, it's a known fact that insecurity is the major challenge that this country is bedeviled with. The rate at which this administration is going about clamping down electronic print and social media is scary and is draconian. The Minister of Information is overbearing. We are taking notes. Yomi Williams, thank you very much. Let's take that break, Lagos. We'll be right back. Yes, indeed, Lagos. Who should regulate journalism and how much? That's the big question on the minds of Nigerian media watchers for the last couple of weeks since the National Assembly began the process of amending the NBC Act and the Nigerian Press Council Act. If you're watching us live on Facebook or YouTube, you can share your thoughts as we go along. I've got great guests on the show with me today, a director at the Center for Media Law, Law and Advocacy. Richard Akinola is here. My second guest is a director, International Press Center, Lanre Arogundade. They've been here before. This is the second time we're having this conversation. And before the break, I mentioned that I wanted to get your thoughts. I'll start with Richard and I'll come to Lanre about this aspect of the bill that talks about digital access funds. So you have free-to-air services supposed to enter this fund and be used to improve digital broadcasting in Nigeria. The sharing formula is what has a lot of people talking. So like I said before the break, NBC gets 40%, NTA and FRCN get 10%, while every other radio and TV station in Nigeria shares the remaining 40%. So every state-owned station, every private station, what do you think about that, Richard?
It's just laughable, quite frankly. Because, I mean, and it's still, if, they are not even being clever the way they are going about it.
Okay.
They are so blatant. And so, how can you, I mean, it's like you want to stifle the, not only the state-owned radio or private station or state government-owned station, but even the private stations. Because now we have so many stations in the whole country. So how are you? I mean, doesn't even sound, I mean, reasonable that you out of all these stations, you just left that something so minute for all those ones. It doesn't make any sense. But like, I'm quite optimistic, quite frankly, that all this can I that word of the Ministry of Information and all these things will not see the light of the day. I can tell you that one. This matter will not see the light of the day because all this trying to make NBC, all these provisions or amendments to make NBC like a department of Ministry of Information and the same thing with the NPC, all this will not see the light of the day. I mean, as I said, and there was a meeting I think the MPO held with the sponsor of those bills in the House, and one of the editors told him, look, if you pass this law that we are going to defy it, and if you want to send everybody to prison, be ready to send everybody to prison. So it gets to that level when open defiance come into play. It's just that it's unfortunate that because of the peculiarity of the broadcast media, there's a limit to which they can go in terms of advocacy, but unlike the private media that can fight back. So I think the private media can successfully fight the battle of both sides.
I wonder if Lanre shares Richard's thoughts and his concluding argument.
As a matter of fact, I didn't even know that NBC is now another revenue and fiscal allocation commission of Nigeria, where they are doing a sharing a formula of 40% and so on and so forth. So if it just tells you the mindset of having an all-bearing, commission, I mean, all-powerful commission, really. And the truth of the matter is that what the NBC is supposed to do is actually to regulate the broadcast media. And that also answers the question you raised earlier on about OTTP or whatever, because the definition of the act of the law establishing the NBC is very, very clear. It says they shall, regulate the radio and television stations, broadcast stations, and the definition is there in terms of what constitutes a broadcast station. The definition does not extend to all these OTTP. So if they bring them in under this amendment bill to become an act, it will still be another form of illegality. So, and like he said, what we should be looking at, and that was this is the model we are putting forward, because I know the theme of this discussion is, who should regulate the media. As a matter of fact, I think we should pose the question the other way to say, how should the media or journalism, be regulated? So if you look at the model we've talked about repeatedly, the Ghanaian example, where you have the regulatory body being a product of the statute, it's a constitutional provision. The constitution defines freedom of the press and the responsibility of the press. So when it comes to funding of the National Mass Media Commission, as they call it in Ghana, for example, it is put, is charged to the consolidated fund. And that is what we're also proposing here, to guarantee the independence of the NBC and the NPC. First, take them out of the executive ambit. Second, ensure that
the composition of their boards comes with the confirmation of the National Assembly, and then put their funding under what we call the first line charge here in Nigeria, so that all this question of sharing revenue and the rest of them will be totally out of place. But like some callers have said, and that we have repeatedly said, it's only a government, because everything they are doing is antithetical to what they say they stand for. You say you stand for to fight corruption, you are fighting the media. You are fighting security, you are fighting the media. Don't forget that the media also provides what we call, in terms of conflict, early warning signals. Because part of what we report is not everything that government is aware of. But in a village, people can see strange movements. They can see people carrying arms. The next thing that will occur to them is, oh, let's get this into the media. Possibly they put it on social media. And then the conventional media, because we have that discipline of verification.
That's right.
We are the ones that can call the commissioner of police in the state to say, oh, we had this information, that movement of arms, what exactly is happening, have you verified that? So the media can actually help to provide early warning signals of violence, of conflicts, of killings, of mass shootings. For now, it's the same media that you are saying must not do this, must not do that. It is not the kind of democracy that we fought for, and it will not augur well for the good of this country. There is no society that develops whose democracy is sustainable where the media is repressed the way this government is trying to do it. But like Richard said, the history of the Nigerian media also is history of resistance to tyranny. And when people say, is this a way of bringing back Decree 4? You now begin to see sense in what they are saying. Because what was the key thing about Decree 4? It was that you could be liable, you could be jailed, even if you publish the truth. That was the other thing about Decree 4.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I'm glad you brought that up.
If you publish information about government and that information was not approved, then you will be liable. That is what we're having now. So they are now saying, if you now go ahead and you are even publishing the truth about conflict, about insurgency, but because government has said don't do it, then you can be liable. That is Decree 4.
The bill also seeks to give the council power to punish a newspaper and or a journalist for publishing information that is proven after the fact to be false. The punishment is 5 million naira or 2 years in prison for the journalist and a payment of 2 million naira compensation to victim. Now, for the publishing house, it's a 10 million naira fine and closure for 1 year and 20 million naira compensation. I want to get your thoughts about the extent of the penalties and the right of the MPC to assess those penalties. I'll start with Lanra and now come to Richard.
I'm sure you will call me, really. So you could see how draconian those provisions are. Now, we're talking of business, and that's why I'm saying that everything they are doing is antithetical to what they say they stand for. This government, they don't want to create employment, but you are introducing a law that can close a newspaper for 1 year, send all the workers into the unemployment market, not just journalists. Don't forget that it's not only journalists that work in media houses.
That's right.
Non-journalists work there, artisans work there, drivers work there. We have sick bays, nurses work there, doctors work there. It's just amazing how these people cannot just think through their actions. But what is even striking in that, really, is not even those fines. Is that they are going to have the power to impose those fines without even recourse to the law. That is in itself, it's a problem. Because, and that's what we're saying, that if a media house commits or allegedly commits a breach that will lead to such hefty fines, including closure, before you can do that, why don't you go to court so that the media organization can defend itself? And there was a particular case we cited in our petition, and I will look for it. I think in the case of I will mention it just now, where the Court of Appeal held that regulatory bodies cannot impose fines, that it is the responsibility of the law court. So that is why we are saying that all the things they are doing is illegal. It's already there. In the case of the NDC, I think one other funding provision, I think section 2N of the proposed amendment under functions of the commission, where it says this punishment that you enumerated can be imposed if it is deemed to be in the public interest. That in itself, so they could just wake up and say, well, we did it in public interest. In any case, you didn't even have to commit an offense. But if the NBC feels it's in the public interest to fine you for telling the truth, then they will go ahead. And public interest, what is the public interest? Who defines it? Is it the NBC, which is just a commission, not an elected body? Nobody elects them. We're just talking of appointment. You now have a law that gives them that weighty responsibility to define. I think that there's a need really to really have a rethink. And there's also a need for some elements in this government to talk to themselves and say, look, we're going too far. And, you know, this should not be the case, because clearly it's becoming embarrassing. These are actions that, because we're living in the age of record. Everything we're doing is just like this program we're having is being recorded. If tomorrow I'm in government and start doing otherwise, people will bring back all these things and play it and say, ah, but, you know, some time ago you were saying all this. So let them play back their own tapes of what they had said before, of the kind of complaints that they made before we had this democracy. We are not personalizing things. Like I keep saying, you know, we are not enemies of the government, but we are friends of the people. I know how many press conferences we hosted in my organization at the International Press Center, you know, during the other, you know, government. I know personalities, this government who came here, used to have press conference, shout this and so on. And I knew how we fought when we felt that other government was being tyrannical. We didn't keep quiet. We didn't keep quiet when the DSS invaded the APC computer center. We didn't keep quiet when they were, you know, you are trying to run down the opposition. So what we're doing, we're just doing our historical responsibility.
Richard, do you agree with Landry?
See us as enemies,
of course, precisely. Because in fact, before I go to talk in terms of the provisions and that NBC has, something just occurred to me.
Okay,
this new directive to broadcast stations.
Mm-hmm.
If broadcast stations were to obey 100% that directive, then the press statement issued by the Air Force over the pilots that ejected from that thing will not be aired. Then nobody will talk about it.
Mm.
So it's a two-edged sword. So when you stop them from reporting, I mean, terrorist activities, that's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
That Air Force plane was attacked.
Mm-hmm.
If I issue a statement myself, I admitted that the Air Force plane was attacked by bandits,
mm-hmm.
and the pilot ejected,
mm-hmm.
and you celebrated the safety of the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you expect the same broadcast stations to effectively use this kind of material that the NBC had warned them not to use? It doesn't make any sense. So going back to the issue of those obnoxious provisions that in that NBC thing, it's just like a rehash of the Municipal Registration Decree 43 of 1993, Babangida's Decree 43, when Uche Chukwumerijie was the Minister of Information.
Hmm.
And the same provisions of jailing journalists, before you can register, you pay 250,000 naira, and all manner of obnoxious and silly conditions. So all these things is like they just lifted from that obnoxious Decree 43 and just imported it into this amendment bill.
For a press
council.
It
doesn't make any sense. And that if we fought that time to the standstill and fought Babangida, I went to court on that issue to Babangida to court, and we won. So if we did that under a military government, so how can a democratic government, I mean, expect to succeed in that regard? It doesn't make any sense. So I'm not looking at them. Let them, if they start all this all over again, we continue the fight. So all this thing we are talking about in terms of regulation. In 2009, we all of us sat down to draft a press council bill. Nigerian press organization, the Minister of Information was there. What's it called? Department of Masscom was represented by Professor Akifeleye. That committee was chaired by Prince Suleiman of blessed memory. And we came out with a fresh draft for Nigerian Press Council, which we submitted to the National Assembly. Then Jerry Gana was the Minister of Information.
Hmm.
Nothing had been done. So it's not as if the media is running away from regulation. We drafted it that, okay, we need an MPC that will be, that we have majority of journalists And if I'm going to send any journalist for Ministry of Information, it has to be a practicing journalist. And of course, the issue of confirmation of the executive secretary will go to the National Assembly. Not that a minister will just sit down somewhere and appoint someone. It goes to the National Assembly, just like the case of NCC. Because I'm NCC, but you have to go to the National Assembly. So this is for checks and balances. So all these things we agreed. But even internally, I recall that in 1990, I was the chairman of the Ethics Committee of the Lagos State NUJ. And it was in the NUJ Constitution in terms of disciplinary measures to deal with unethical practices. I was the chairman as far back as 1990, and we dealt with some of these issues. So it's not as if the media is running away from internal regulation. Yes, I mean, we are for it, but not the one imposed by the government. Because for the amendments proposed by the government, majority, the board can sit without the representative of NUJ and the guild editors, because it proposed majority of members from the government side. I would say, no, it's not possible. You can't, it's like a government just sitting down or not to just call anybody and try someone. So it's not as if the media is running away from regulation. The media is for regulation, but one, internal regulation. And if you are going to subject ourselves to this, the General Press Council, don't forget that even when Prince Omonamon was a Minister of Information, the battle had been on. Then he came with a Media Council Bill. We opposed it. I'm talking about when he was a minister under Babangida. We opposed it, and it was solved. Then, of course, before up to the time of Abdusalami Abubakar, that came with some funny amendment, and the Minister of Proposals went to court, and the matter is court in the Supreme Court. At the court of first hearing, 17 items were struck out by the High Court. So, but the matter is at the Supreme Court. So, what I can do with, let's see how far the Supreme Court will go, and know, let the Supreme Court decide one way or the other, and know where we are.
You know, the government keeps on saying that misinformation and hate speech are a big problem. And that's why it's necessary for government to take a more direct role in regulation. You disagree. So tell me and tell Lagos, Lanre, what measures the press itself have in place to filter out misinformation and not to let itself become a tool for hate speech and incitement. You've already mentioned that when a story breaks somewhere, when people report something somewhere, some of the things that the press does is get in touch with the security agents in that state to try and confirm. What are other things that the press does to regulate itself, right? To filter out misinformation, to not allow itself become a tool for hate speech or incitement. But before you answer, let me remind you, Lagos, if you just tuned into the show, you're listening to Hard Facts on 99.3 Nigeria Info. I'm Sandra Ezekwesili, and I have on the show with me today a director, International Press Center, Lanre Arogundade, on the show. We also have director at the Center for Media Law and Advocacy, Richard Akinola. And they're both talking to me about who should regulate journalism, how much should that regulation look like, how should it look like, who should do it, how should it be done. These are the questions that we are addressing at the moment. And that's because the National Assembly began the process of amending the NBC Act and the Nigerian Press Council Act. Lanre. I think you're muted, Lanre. Aha, we can hear you now.
No.
Oh, can you hear me now? Okay,
yes.
Okay, all right. So, well, it's I think the media has a responsibility. Richard has given you an example of how the media could regulate itself. And this is one of the challenges that we're throwing at our colleagues. Currently in the leadership of the Nigeria Union of Journalists, we need to revive the Ethics Committee of the NUJ and make it a strong institution. We also need to revive the Ethics Committee of the Guild of Editors. And I'm sure as we speak, the Nigerian Press Organization, comprising the Guild, the NUJ, and the proprietors, and are trying to, you know, come up with some, you know, frameworks for the self-regulation that will be much, much, you know, stronger. I've also mentioned an example of what the media should be doing, and that was with respect to the 2019 elections, when over 200 media organizations came together and endorsed a Nigerian Media Code of Election Coverage that talked about
the need to, you know, report with discretion, ensure discipline of verification, you know, fact-checking. As we speak, individual media houses also have it. Newspapers publish on their back pages or wherever that, you know, they go with, they abide with the code of truthfulness and so on. Now, when you now say, what can the media do to stop spread of misinformation? You see, you can't be holding the media responsible for what it does not, it does not bring into bear the first instance. Most of this misinformation or fake news operate in the realm of the social media or hate speech. And the service providers in that industry are doing some things about it. This was even what led us to this problem. The perception that the speech made by the president or the comment he made in reaction to, you know, was like a threat of genocide when he spoke about using the language that people understand. That was why Twitter took it away. So all these Twitter, Facebook, they already have, you know, technologies they use to isolate some messages, to dictate some words and say, this will not happen. And that was what we told government. Work more with these people. Look at them. What are those things that constitute ASP? That is what they do in all, you know, societies. As we speak, I think about 3 days or 2 days ago, the American president was complaining about the latest, you know, wave of COVID-19 in America and saying that the social media was probably responsible because of spread of information about people just feeling that, oh, it was all over, people were safe. But they have not said, oh, because of that, you know, Twitter or Facebook will be suspended in America. They're having a dialogue with all these things. That is what we need to do. And I always say something. Everybody says, oh, what do we do about media when they publish fake news? What do we do about government when they publish fake news? That is the truth. I mean, they sometimes too, you know, sometimes you see, I hope you saw the video the other time of somebody, a road that was supposed to have been constructed in a place, and somebody just went there and started picking, and the whole thing was just, you know, falling into places. That is false information. That is deceit. What do we do? I recall during the 2019 election, because we monitored media coverage of elections, and at least we monitored about 12 newspapers then, and of course other broadcasts. During the last election, you didn't really have the media element of hate speech in our reporting of elections. But we had spokespersons or media propagandists of the big parties, the PDP and the APC, then sending false videos to give the impression that they had large crowds at their rallies. I'm not saying that the candidates sent them, maybe they just felt that, let us help our principal. We had a video where they claimed the president was addressing a rally in Kano, and it turned out to be the video of a football match. Another one by the PDP showed that it could somewhere, it was a different thing. So what do we do now when these people also engage in fake? So I don't begin to, because the perception is that the media is already guilty. Because the way they speak is as if, oh, well, you know, there's fake news, so we have to do something. So we have already, you know, we are presumed guilty when we're supposed to be proved innocent. So the guilt is already established in their minds. They're just looking for ways to punish us for the guilt we're supposed to have been, for the offense we are supposed to have committed, even when there's no proof of that. I'm not saying that everything in the media is correct, but the truth of the matter is that if you publish a wrong information by mistake, currently you can publish a rejoinder. You can even apologize. If you still feel not satisfied, you could go to court and claim that you have been defamed or you have been libeled, and then the matter can go to the law court. My worry is that this acts, the way they are being amended, would in fact ask the jurisdiction of the courts. And that is not what we are doing for us in a democracy. So the case I was trying to recall the other time mentioned, just to be clear on that, has to do with a case between an organization called NOSDRA. And NOSDRA is a form of regulator.
It's a regulator, okay.
Yeah, it's a regulator. National Oil Spill Detection and Response Agency.
All right.
So it's a regulator in that case. And they imposed hefty fines on Mobil. So that case, you know, went to court, and it went to the appeal court. So what we are talking about is the principle established by the Court of Appeal in that case between NOSDRA and Mobil Producing Nigeria Unlimited. And this matter was decided in 2018, where the Court of Appeal, this is a case that people can check, held that, and I'm quoting the Court of Appeal now, the imposition of fines by NOSDRA was contrary to its powers on the basis that penalties or fines are imposed as punishment for an offense or violation of the law, and the power as well as competence to establish that an offense has been committed belongs to the courts and not a regulatory agency.
Gentlemen, let's leave it at that. We need to take a quick commercial break. We'll take a quick commercial break and then come back and wrap up. It's great conversation. You're listening to Hard Facts Lagos. Don't go away.